Once upon a time, there was a boy born in Ghana, West Africa, and that's me.
Really? I just started recording. Perfect.
I was about 2 years old. My family came over here and helped me remember the American dream. As long as I can remember, I was impressed with that. I used to watch Saturday morning with Superstars religiously. My career was kind of like everybody's. Very linear.
I didn't know he tried over Tough Enough.
You graduate high school, you go to college.
I didn't know that. Was he on Tough? Was that a Tough Enough trial?
Exactly what I did. And I knew in my heart that I didn't want to be anything but a WWE superstar. I was such a mess when I was right to try out the Tough Enough. I think I have the tape.
I'm sick for a while. I guess I'm WWE now. I can do the live route too.
Tried out, didn't get it there. Probably why him and Punk are good friends, eh? Really, they give a shit, right? Probably.
Because he's always smiling.
I think people should be a high flyer.
I was hoping they'd have a name or something on there. They could see it.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't see it. His sister, probably.
Jumping the top row and some fall from the ring. Just make people stop and stare and let a jump on.
I know I come out there and I yell boom, 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 because I come out there and I try to be explosive, like an explosion.
Explosive like an explosion? Huh.
I wanted nothing more than to be involved with the video and to immerse myself in it. And now that it's finally come true, I just can't stop smiling.
So, they didn't take our seats. Yeah. Not entertaining on Raw. Not when he's cutting that promo. No. You know what, actually? I was kind of screwed up because I thought it started at 10, but it's 10:30. I was
10:30 to 12.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't hear. Couldn't celebrate that.
I lost.
We're here for only one reason to get the World Wrestling Federation belt.
You're a father, five.
173, but it's actually 175, because they forgot about Jesse and Gorilla. Mr. Down.
In the other ones. What? How about Sean? He's in all the other ones.
It's true. I like to sit on Anderson next to Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
Show the Horseman parody.
Yeah. Actually, that would be amazing if they did.
Everything is off the cuff. Nothing is rehearsed. And a lot of the stuff is going to be controversial.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if everyone is ready, are we prepared to meet the battle?
Yeah.
Our first guest will be competing later on tonight, the last man standing match for the World's Heavyweight Championship. But in 1995, his first match ever was against Hulk Hogan, and he became the WCW champion. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome. At the time, he was known as the Giant. Today, we know him as the Big Show. The NWO, Big Sexy Kevin Nash, and X-Pac.
Sunglasses, eh, on Xbox, perhaps? So I'm going to tell you a great story from yesterday. This is your show. Thank you very much. All right. Finally, we have a very unique perspective for this panel. A man that was there from the beginning who can give us insight into what it was like when the new wave of talent came in and quote-unquote took over WCW. You know him as SmackDown General Manager. You also know him as a multi-time WCW champion. I know you can all dig it. Ladies and gentlemen, SmackDown General Manager, Booker T!
So Nash, he's like, he's getting ready to clap, but he keeps talking, he's like...
Of what made WWE great. And today, we're going to discuss WCW. Now, the first order of business is going to be the early years, and I'm going to start with you, Booker T. In the beginning, during WCW's early days, the homegrown talent, what was it like in that locker room in the early days of WCW before all of this started?
I've been there from the beginning of, starting back at the end of 1992, beginning of 93. It was about competition. It was about guys going out there competing against each other. It was a wrestling company. It wasn't about going out and doing promos, backstage segments or anything like that. We were all out there trying to achieve one thing, and that was going out being the best in the middle of the ring. That's what made it unique, I think, at that time.
Kevin, you were also there in the beginning under certain monikers such as Oz and things of this nature as well. Your opinion of early WCW, please.
Wow. I think I got there in 90 or 89 or whatever it was. And the one thing was basically the entire company was run on nepotism. If you didn't have somebody that was in the booking committee or somebody that was a top guy, there was no way kind of break in. It was just, in center stage, there were two locker rooms. It was like the A guys, and then the other locker room had all the jabronis. And,
I lived in that locker room.
I spent 3 long years in that locker room. But a pool of fast one, Shawn Michaels got me to WWE, and the rest is history. But it was 3 miserable years that made me miss my job as a strip club bouncer.
I came in for my tryout at WCW. I didn't know the difference, so I went and dressed in the over guy's locker room. I didn't go in the Jabroni's locker room. Everybody was giving me these funny looks, but nobody was saying anything to me.
Story. I appreciate it.
$3,000 a week? Is that the cutoff?
Yeah, something like that.
If you made $3,000 a week, you could go to the other line.
I had to work, like I said, I started at the bottom, I had to work my way up to that locker room, I did by the way.
Now, Big Show, at this time, you have yet to break into the business. Were you a fan of wrestling at the time?
Absolutely. I was a huge fan. I actually never knew if I was going to have any talent or not. I remember I quit playing college basketball, a lot of personal stuff like that. And I had a tryout with the Chicago Bears. I played football. Well, I had a chance to go on Danny Bonducci's morning show. And he was going to teach me all hope. And I never really thought about being a star, so to speak, or a legend or any of that stuff. I just was an extremely broke kid that had zero job skills. Other than checking your ID or selling you a used car, that's about all I was qualified to do. And that was bare minimum. If you were hot, I'd let you in anyway. So. I wanted to, being a fan of professional wrestling and growing up and watching Paul Orndorff, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, I just wanted to be one of those guys that I figured got beat up. I figured, well, they make more money than I can make. So, you know, found that I would have fun doing it. I never thought it would be a long career. My stint in WCW, that first match in Hogan, was a one-match deal. That was basically, I was brought in to work with Hogan, and I didn't understand it at the time. But looking back now, that was a pretty brave business maneuver on Hogan's part, on WCW's part. I was 7 foot, 390, 400 pounds. I could snap Hogan in half, just on pure, adrenaline and excitement. In fact, they put me in that match, and, I was surrounded some good guys. At the time, I was broken in the arm, and some of the other guys that were in my ear helping me, and it turned out I lucked into a career, and I'm very thankful. Every day I wake up, I love what I do. I love me or hate me, I still love what I do every day.
In about 1994, Hulk Hogan leaves WWF at the time, comes to WCW. A little later, Eric Bischoff takes over, and in September, the first Nitro is launched. Now, what's interesting to point out is Raw is preempted on this night due to the U.S. Open tennis. Eric Bischoff gives a live Nitro from the Mall of America, and everyone remembers that Lex Luger turns the world on its ear. Let's take you back to that night right now.
Started and how long you've been at it, brother. But when you come into WCW, when you get in Hulk Hogan's face, brother. There are thousands of Hulkamaniacs, brother, that are going to stand behind me each and every single way, brother. So as far as I'm concerned, brother, as great as you may be, you don't have to prove nothing to me, brother. You don't have to wait till next week. You don't have to wait till next month. Just stick that stinky palm of yours out, brother. Shake my hand, and I'll put the WCW title on the line next Monday on Monday Nitro, right in Miami. I'll put the title.
You better be away from it. I'm out there. Take the home run.
You better.
Ladies and gentlemen, I can't believe that apparently next Monday, yes, it's been confirmed. Hogan and Luger for the WCW Heavyweight title. If we can keep it under wraps, Eric Bischoff, Steve McMichael, the Brain. I can hardly wait till next Sunday in the meantime. From the love of America, have a great one.
Kevin? Your thoughts.
Brother, wow, that's even worse than I remember. I don't remember having Luger have a pair of flosses haircut. No, I remember we were in the WWE. I mean, we just watched them. It's like, number one, the whole time I was in WCW, the only place they drew and you got the rumors was Jacksonville. They get like 1,000, 2,000 people in Jacksonville. They wouldn't draw any place else. Any place else you went in the Northeast was like doing stand-up on a cruise ship.
I remember they talked about us going to Madison Square Garden. We were going to go in Vince's backyard. Remember that?
It was a felt floor.
Yeah, it was like an elevator. It was like, 800 people in the backyard.
No, it was actually Joe Burns.
It was outhouse.
I was actually like 2 days prior to that, I was on the road with Lex. We were traveling together. And, when we parted ways, he was just, you know, like, hey, I'll see you next road trip. Right now, I'll see you on the next day.
That's before Stingy came along. Right. You know, before the internet, before multimedia was back then. Not everybody knew anything that was going to happen to at a different time.
Along to those days.
Right.
You probably have a very unique perspective of this particular night.
Yeah. Actually, it was pretty entertaining, of course. But for myself, you know, I was pretty young, you know, watching it. But I could see how far behind the times, you know, WCW was at that time, right, opposed to WWE. You know, you turn the television on, you see, you know, Stone Cold, you know, Triple H, you know, bouncing somebody out the stairs. You know what I mean? It was a fight. Somebody was bloodied up and beat up. And I would be watching that show. I would tune in very, very, very often, you know, to make sure I knew exactly what it was going to take to make it to that next level. And it seemed like our guys were playing around. It looked like a game, almost looked like action figures, you know, that kids play with, opposed to men. Going out there and fighting on a weekly basis, and I could actually see that we wasn't in a good place at that time. But for myself, it was a good place because I was just watching everybody decline, and I was literally putting in the time to, you know, just slip into that spot, you know, come in through the back door, and you know, make my place in history in WCW.
The biggest difference too is like guys in WCW, they were hungry. Everybody had their set deal, that's what you made, whether you worked one day a year, you worked 300 days a year. You guys can't hear me?
I hear you.
No. I'm sorry, I'm getting yelled at from the back. Can you hear me now? Apparently my voice is not big enough for the room, or for the thing. No, the thing was, the guys at WCW were very comfortable. They were very, there wasn't a lot, it was very easy going. And I think that's one of the things that at the end of it, they really just walked up and slapped that place around and stirred up the intensity. I mean, I was, 25 when you guys came in? And I remember Scott Hall, the first thing he said to me, he made from Georgia, and I wanted to punch him in the face the first time I met that guy. Well, I said to him, he goes, hey, Scott Hall, how you doing, man? Make sure you tuck your chin. I'm like, what the hell did you say? You come in here like, I'm going to take your finish off your freaking mind? But it was a different mindset. how aggressive and how hungry you need to be to be successful. I mean, you know, I came in and Cody and Flair and Arn, they were pretty cool to go out there and do their thing and work, so to speak. You know what I mean? Nobody was hungry. I didn't find out about competition, what real competition was, until I came up here.
Okay, so we have talent jumping ship from WWE to WCW. We have some uninvited guests. And then a word that will now become synonymous with wrestling and synonymous with the Monday Night Wars, the Outsiders. Woo! Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the Outsiders.
Coming back from one of the nitros,
And it was unbelievable because it was still the pecking order. So I lived in Central Florida with Scott, and Hulk lived in Tampa, so you had to go, you had to fly past your house to drop off the Pharaoh, and then come back to your house. But on the way back, the Bischoff went back to Atlanta. And the Bishop was telling everybody, you know, he was saying, you know, can you believe this, can you believe it? And I just looked at him, I said, and he's, you know, he's putting over WCW. I said, do you realize that this storyline is the two people from the WWE have came to your territory, and everybody in America thinks those two guys are going to beat your entire company down. That's how bad WCW is. He just looked at me like, it was the truth. I mean, we held off the whole company. Just two guys. That's what we got, you know. I mean, we quickly were like, we need another member that was real who in the ground. Well, I don't know, maybe the biggest guy in the world.
Yeah, I was having trouble with my release, so I was supposed to be like one of the next guys. And, I was getting my change ripped on my release. So, Big G, I think you ended up being the number six guy or something, right? You know, I was Hulk six.
There's four.
Oh,
four? Number four. I'm the guy that nobody remembers.
I
knew.
Saved my life in Canton, Ohio.
Can you tell that story?
Oh, typical WCW, you know, organized as usual. And we go to the Canton Civic Center, one of those hot spots that, you know, this company still runs. And we get there, and they have this basic idea where we're going to fight through the crowd with a couple of WCW guys. And we, you know, we beat them up and lay them down before we even start up the rampway. By this time, the crowd, which has happened to be all half WCW, starts to fight. And it's like around us, like a bee's nest. And I'm watching this thing transpire. I look around, and I looked over, and I said, gee. I said, go. And I got behind Paul, Joe, and got behind him, and just like a blocking back. And I just got behind Joe, and ducked my head, and Joe just pulled his way through these people. I never even got touched. It was like nothing. And everybody else was behind me, but I just grabbed him. I was like, go, Joe. Thank you, my man.
You're welcome, my brother. You're welcome.
Now, Booker, how do you feel? How did you feel? And Kevin said, you know, what he meant there, that WWE guys are going to come in and beat up WCW guys and save WCW. How did that feel for the WCW locker room?
And I don't know about the locker room, but as far as myself go, when those guys gave it, I thought it was great for the company.
Yeah, you were also a younger talent. You saw the potential.
Well, I did. I saw what these guys was doing with anything. I saw that they were talent. Guys like Kevin, guys like, you know, Shawn Michaels, these guys, guys even like, Scott Hall, these guys gave me the blueprint on what it took to make it in this business and make real money in this business. When they came in and took over like that, I saw what it meant, how the power was, in the WWE coming to WCW, how much money these guys were getting paid, opposed to WCW guys. I was like, man, I want to be like that. So for myself, I was a sponge. I was just taking it all in, watching these guys, watching what they do. More importantly, what I saw them do was fuck the system. I was like that. That right there was something I took note of and say, okay, one thing, only way you can fuck, the system, if you got talent. If you, put it behind the seats, and I was like, man, okay, now I see exactly what's going on. So for me, I'm watching these guys, in the beginning, the outsiders, I thought that was the greatest thing that could happen for WCW at that time. But I'm sure, of course, we're going to move along and get to the bigger part. that story.
Here's a question. Who was resistant in the locker room? Who was jealous? Who was angry at these new outsiders?
Probably easier to ask who wasn't.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I mean, everybody had animosity towards some of these guys coming in, and not just these guys, but all of the WWE talent that came to WCW got an instant paycheck. They could sit home, and they would have an instant paycheck just because they came from WWE. So that just let us know that we were the B team, and we need to step it up in so many different ways.
Once I'm out with that, Scott and I had just left the Clique, which wasn't exactly the most popular group in WWE. So, I mean, that was a heat faction. So it was like, we're used to, as long as you had somebody that had your back, I mean, the thing to do was to stir. We would go up to one guy and ask him what he was getting and tell him we were making twice that.
Yeah, and we're sitting in that car driving their ass.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
And we would do it. I mean, we would just make up numbers. I'm making 400. We make 750.
No, you're getting cheap. So
do any of you have any stories of maybe some behind-the-scenes actual fights that may have took place born out of jealousy?
I don't know about jealousy, but I remember an incident with Roddy Piper. And I think Roddy swelled his pants on that one. We had a main event, and it was like a 10-man, what was the situation? It was like a 10-man match, and the finish of the match was supposed to be this big all-out schmoz with everybody fighting. And Piper comes in the ring, and he's so excited, you know, this is what he said he was so excited because the crowd was so hot, that he just goes right into the finish.
We got 20 minutes
to do this. It's just a complete mess. The guys are falling all over each other. Somebody falls on him and messes his knee up really bad. And, short the story, we get to the back and we're sitting in the locker room and all of a sudden, Cap just goes, and I'm not going to repeat what he said, motherfucker! Slammed his fist down, Eli out the door, and I looked at Scott and I said, still. He went right for Piper's dressing room. Piper must have known something was up because he had his door locked and kept kicking the door. Flair was in there. Flair said, I'm not part of this. And Roddy Piper's bodyguard stepped aside. Apparently, he wasn't part of it either. Kev cut promo on Roddy. We love Roddy this day, but Kev cut promo on Roddy and, high faced him. And then Roddy tried to kick his knee out, but it was 10 people attempting. But that was a fun story, but I just didn't have a story under that.
It doesn't seem like something I do.
No, not at all.
No, I can imagine you blowing your stack to someone who put the screw on the match. No, no. You're so easy going.
Our nickname for him is the Big Grouch, by the way.
Okay, these are all very interesting stories. I'm sure we can go.
Hey, really? Are you patronizing me?
No, not at all. I love this stuff. I'm just like everyone else, you know? And being a fan, one of the best moments for me and for all of us is the formation of arguably the coolest group in all of wrestling history. Three letters, the NWO. And it all happened on this night.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, the page loose. The man whose plan and goal is to take over the WCW with force and hostility. We are told to be free, ladies and gentlemen, and I must apologize as I have been informed, and as you can see, there are only two. Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the
Thank you.
turned down Heenan's audio there. But who's sighted for that?
I think so,
for your consideration.
And he was sitting at home, or not sitting at home, he was sitting outside, he was watching the train leave. And there's one thing that, Hulk is, it's not, you know, he's definitely not a, stupid person. And he said, no. I'm going to be the, everybody's turning on me. Because, you know, they have done a whole lot of vitamins and everything out of that one, so. All turned and the rest is history. He gave us, you know, he gave us instant credibility because we had Hulk. And we were, you know, we were the guys that turned Hulk, you know, so.
Yeah, it was sweet, though.
Yeah, it was.
Having Hulk on the team, you know, with Rob.
Yeah, but it was, you know, it was also one of those things, too, that he did things so old school. So it was like we went, we started doing those black and white interviews that ended up being sound bites. Because the first time we went down to Orlando, Hulk went into like a 5 minute brother, 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 me and Scott were like. We went back and we took a break and we sat down on a picnic table and Eric came over and he goes, how do you think it's going? We said, we can't do this. There's just no way we can do this. And I think it was Neil Pruitt that worked in production, was one of the few guys that had a clue. He was also the guy that did his voice that knew New World Order. He put all that together. He put that music together and he also...
Is that true?
Yeah. And he took the, you know, 7.5 hours of Hulk interview and me and Scott's 30 seconds of sound bites and put it together, you know, a 30 second, you know, spot on the show every week. So, it was actually great because...
Oh, everybody thought it was really cool.
Well, people also thought that it was a shoot. So, there was no way that you could be on a tape show. You know, because if you were on a tape show and they didn't want you there, they would just edit it. So they would always, that's when we started doing our, we'd come in and do our own little our tape matches on the empty arenas. And we would buy the, by the time from WCW. But they just, even their marketing, they came out with a shirt of like Flair's thing, and then they came out with like maybe four or five guys in this like set of shirts, all by the same artist, and one of them was Scott. And I was just like, you can't sell that shirt. They're like, why not? I said, we don't work, technically we don't work your company. They would come down from New York, and we just like, we're the Confederate Army, you wouldn't sell our merchandise. And they're like, well, we already printed 10,000. I said, well, let's sell them out of the van in front of the, you know, from the arena. It's like a bootleg. And they let us. You know, and actually, like, they took their merch and sell them. But it worked. But like little things, like they didn't get, they didn't get, I guess, because they hadn't had anything that was successful, they didn't get any longevity out of this. We had to, you know, take some, precautions and killing the story.
Booker, give us the perspective from WCW side from the locker room, your thoughts and your peers' thoughts on all this went down.
Wow, lucky, and you know, me being a guy up and coming at WCW at that time, watching everything unfold at that time with the NWO and Hulk Hogan making the big switch. I mean, of course. As a youngster, everybody was a fan of Hulk Hogan. And so to see him make that jump, it was great to see the fans. Super, I mean, over the top, I mean, extremely over the top. I mean, the arenas were full, went from, you know, 1,000 people, you know, to 5, 10, 20,000 people, you know, overnight. You know, it was literally exciting. I mean, at that time, it was perhaps the most exciting time in WCW's history to that point right there. Definitely NWO changed the whole name of the game when they formed that group right there. I thought it was something special. But on the other hand, you know, I always said that I felt like it was something that they slipped on the banana people. And found it was something like they really didn't know what they had until the fans let them know exactly what they had. And it was really that attitude more than anything, that rebellious group of guys formed right there, I think what made it so special, especially for WCW at that time, because we had nothing going on, so that right there definitely was a spark.
Giant, your relationship with Hogan at this time, what were your
thoughts?
Hope was when they brought me in, was kind of like my mentor. It was funny because I saw a lot of the way things, Hulk did things, and of course Hulk was very successful. But I rode up and down the road every weekend with Scott, Sean, and Kevin. And we would sit up and sled, all four of us packed into a town car. And Kevin and I in the front seat, shoulder to shoulder, beefing up the car, windows rolled down, 30 degrees out, Scott and Sean in the back seat, freezing to death. Right. And I was learning a lot about how different things work. Because when I came in, Hogan's guy, worked with Hogan, worked with Flair. I worked with all these guys that just kind of gave me an outside shell. Riding in the car with these guys, I was learning about marketing, I was learning about money, about value, about so many things. And it was funny because Kevin talks about starting things up, and he would have me so pissed off by the time we got to the arena. Because I'd just be furious. And then we had a great thing one time, we were attacking Luger's car. You remember that? So they spent about 45 minutes winding me up on how, kind of falling behind. I need to show my talent and show, the things that I bring to the table and make them step up and take notice of me. I'm 25 years old. I'll take this hand grenade swallow it. Yeah, I can do it. So, we're supposed to have been hunting Lex Luger or something, and there was a rental car supposedly was Lex Luger's, and all he was supposed to do was break a window out of it. Well, Kevin winds me up so freaking bad and turns me loose that I completely destroyed a brand new Cadillac. Every piece of glass, the roof caved in. The roof was about this high from the dashboard. And the thing was, after we did the shot, the guy who was in charge of security, Doug Dillinger, remember? It was Doug Dillinger's rental car.
It was driving back like 90 miles to Atlanta Airport.
The thing was, the amazing thing was, the window on a Cadillac, you see people getting wrecks at 90 miles an hour without a seatbelt on, and their head doesn't go through that glass. That glass in front of that, and and they're telling them, don't do this, we're going to do it. Show takes one step from the ground up on the hood of the car, and it just creases, takes another step, it creases, he picks his foot up, and he kicks like through the front window to like here, and the window just explodes. I just went like this, wow, I would not want that human being to hit me. I was so glad. It was like, we had the Frankenstein monster, but we also had the violin. It was a good night.
Now, was this for your own entertainment, or creatively, did you have a bigger plan?
Well, the thing was, he was the giant. That's what he was, and so we were just trying to tell him, you have to do things there's things that you can do that nobody else can do. And you need to display those things. You need to pick people up with one hand and hold them straight out and nobody else can because nobody else can. I would just say there's a reason why, he's the largest athlete in the world.
Show how much of what you learned on those car rides do you utilize today in all your success? We're in the Royal Rumble tonight.
I don't think I'd be successful if I was today without having a chance to experience Scott, Kevin, and Sean. There's just a different mentality, the difference between New York and WCW. I mean, WCW is a place where guys went, they got paid, they retired, they lived well, they took it easy, everybody shook hands, or a song. It was a very good old boy, relaxed environment. I didn't know any difference because, quite frankly, I was green, and I was already hanging around a cool club anyway, because Logan brought me in, so I didn't have to go through a lot of things like Booker and a lot of the other guys went through. Working with those guys and making them understand there's so much more this industry, there's so much more this potential, so much more potential for me in this industry than I wasn't being made aware of. Because let's face it, guys who are comfortable and have experience really aren't going to smarten you up any more than they have to. These guys hold me under their wing and smarten me up completely.
You know, and, you know, I'm still trying to get smart. We'll see if we'll figure it out. But it made a difference in being aggressive and taking care of yourself in the ring and exploiting what you bring to the table. You know, because the leaders, you know, Kevin's telling me all the time, what was your big advice about something in the match? If I didn't want to do what they wanted me to do, just do what I want to anyway and tell them to get over it, basically.
Yeah, what are they going to do about it?
That means we're going to fight him. You know, I'm going to say he could do it. I'll tell you right now, if he doesn't want to move, you can't move him. So he says, don't move. Don't do it.
Scotty's dying to sit behind you one night. That was incredible. Sorry.
All right. I forgot that.
But they actually laughed at me when they picked that, so.
Creatively, a lot of things are going on at this time. What were the reactions of the guys like Ric Flair, Sting, all of the old WCW guard that were now, with no disrespect, almost second tier? How were they reacting to all of this?
Well, I mean, it's really hard to speak for, you know, Ric Flair and those guys and that Sting and whatnot, but I can honestly say, I don't think it was a good taste in their mouth probably at the time, because these guys really did come in and take over. I mean, not just from a position of their own. They made the owner, I mean, actually not the owner, but the president of, you know, pretty much operations, Eric Bischoff, you know, went from wearing suits to wearing jeans and acting like a part of the crew, you know. It was something that you saw, you know, the writing on the wall. You saw it happening before it actually happened. You saw the company declining when we would go on the road and go to, you know, St. Vincent Sturgis, you know, and not make a dime. And, you know, it was a big party and everybody was having a good time, you know what I mean? For myself, sitting back and watching, I'm wondering what the hell is going on here. You know, because you would see the boss, you know, hanging out, you know, with the talent. That's one thing that I never thought mixed well was the boss, you know, mixing with the talent. I don't think you'll ever see Vince McMahon, you know, hanging out at the bar with the talent. I saw the writing on the wall at that point, so I'm sure they felt the same way I did from a perspective. But nobody said anything. They just let the shit keep sitting.
I remember that. I just know that, like, Blair and guys like that were real pissed. Because, I mean, we were running through everybody when we first got there. Because Kevin Sullivan was the booker, the writer, and he believed in having a lot of heat on the heels. Which means, you know, the heels were strong. So we had to get over beat the hell out of everybody first. So it went on for a long time. So I think a lot of the guys, they figured that we were just going to keep beating everybody. Not give it back.
I remember getting out, I remember we used to show up in the limo and had all that prestige. I remember getting out of one of the shows. I was talking to you. It was like five freaking limos. The entire company was in the NWO. And it was like, okay, well, I'll go back to WCW so I got something to work with. It was like, five limos with like 25 guys. They're all in the NWO. It's not WCW anymore. And then the guys couldn't compete on the microphone with these guys. They couldn't outmaneuver them. Politically, I guess, you know, all that crap goes on. They could do that. You guys were just so far ahead of everyone else on that level that, you know, they all just joined.
You know, you mentioned politics and we are shooting. Booker, what was it like to work with Kevin Nash during this time?
Well, I mean, not just Kevin Nash, but I mean, I get to that, but the NWO was, like the guys were saying, just running through everybody. They would beat the baby faces, the good guys up this week, the following week, the next week. It continues. And you just wondering when the title was going to ship. I always say the NWO literally single-handedly was this close to killing the business. I say that due to the reason, I mean, I worked with Kevin the first time I worked with him in Canada. It was the first time that I had ever worked in Canada. Place was sold out. But,
waiting for the Raptors.
You guys going out
again? Exactly. I don't know. But I worked with Kevin and played Kevin's music first, NWO music. And he goes out, you know, the fans are going crazy, and I'm, you know, my first time down, a good guy, you know, and Kevin goes out, boom, you know, he grabs the microphone, NWO in the house! The crowd goes crazy, and I'm in the back waiting on my musical man, I'm going to go, what are you doing? I had to get up out of here and say, you know, and boom, I mean, you know, I come out and I'm like, who is this guy, you know, and the crowd booed me, you know, the unmerciful, you know, all the way through the match, and I knew that that time right there, you know, the NWO was great. Beginning to totally take a bad turn because when the bad guys become the good guys, we really got a problem in this business. But as far as working together, though, all in all, we've always had a great time.
We started giving back right around that time.
Well, actually,
just in time.
Actually, you know, Kevin tried to take me off the list, the blacklist.
Kevin, were you aware of some of the jealousy and the dissension? Did you care at all what anyone in the locker room thought of you and your group?
Oh, it was the same thing as we did as a clip. We'd be on a 23-day European trip. We would all be miserable. We'd sit in somebody's room and tell each other how miserable we were. Then we'd put on our happy face and go get on the bus and laugh because it drove everybody insane. Because everybody else is miserable and like, what's making these guys so happy? And we did the same thing. Just like, make people miserable. Monday nights, there was a party. There wasn't 5, 6, 7 cases of beer in Hogan's room.
Yeah.
We set out for it. Because I knew it'd be, I'd look at the sheet and be like, Hogan interview. That's it? For 3 hours? He's going to go out and talk for 20 minutes and then Scott going to stay in the background?
So at this time, I'm sure everyone is enjoying great financial success. Sean, I'm going to start with you. How does your life begin to change because of what the NWO brought to WCW financially?
It did. It did. That was part of the, I was probably the lowest. I was like on the minimum. I think I was with you.
You were making the same as me at that one, like 250 or something.
No, I wasn't even making that.
Really?
No, I was making
200 bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as the car ride, you used to wind me up.
We got you bumped up pretty quick.
Yeah, we did okay.
Yeah, we got you bumped up quick. It just takes a while.
Yeah. Yeah, when I left there, you see, I got bumped up a whole lot.
Hey,
it worked.
How did you get paid,
right? It worked. It worked.
It's a business.
It's good. I remember a huge, huge argument between you guys and Hogan when Hogan came here with the Hogan's Wolfpack shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, I remember. Oh, boots and everything.
Had his boots, had the Hogan's Wolfpack. In fact, I think Hogan got, what, 90% of his merch? Wasn't that right?
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. I think he got actually 33 1/3% of all WCW merch.
Yeah, but he was getting.
At one point, I remember when they scanned your doll.
Yeah,
remember that book?
I remember that.
Came up Hulk Hogan.
Rey Mysterio doll came up.
You scanned Booker's doll for sale, it would come up a Hulk Hogan sale, but not come up a Booker's.
Who negotiated that? I don't
know.
Henry Hogan.
Yeah.
Oh, it was brutal. Yeah, the thing was, like, it was an ATM machine, so you knew you were kind of getting screwed on merch, but you also knew that this thing wasn't going to go forever, so you always knew that you had the back door where you were going to sue them once they shut the doors. Which I did.
Absolutely. And, you know, and of course, WCW being the founding company they were, their Fortune 500 company, they shred all documentation of WCW.
Yeah.
I thought you guys had yours done with the actual Turner and stuff.
Yeah, we had a Turner Home Entertainment deal.
Just in case they were out of business and still get you on.
We did.
Yeah. It, at this time, how are you getting along financially? Are you saving your money? Do you have a view towards the future at this time?
Sure. It was the most money I'd ever made at the time. If I would have had my crap together and knowing when my release was up, I would have came in with these guys and would have gotten my money, but, you know, crap happens. But the thing is Scott was like, you know, having issues at the time, so not only was I on my own shows, but Eric stuck me on all Scott's shows, too, so I could kind of babysit, I guess is the right term.
You were babysitting?
Yeah, that's very well. So, like, I mean, basically, I would be out on the road 25 days a month, and that was why I left here in the first place. I had more time off. I was kind of miserable at one point.
It seems that for everyone making so much money, that you guys, miserable seems to be this term that comes up.
Well, that was all money you were going to make. There was no incentive clause.
There's no incentive to work harder. I mean, you know, I'm sitting there making $200 grand a year, working every show, made it against Sting, made it against Luger, made it against Hogan. I was the heel that worked all the time on the road. And I was making what I was making, and Lanny Poffo was sitting at home making, what, $350, $400?
Yeah.
It never worked. Never worked.
We actually worked once, actually, on a house show.
Woo!
Yeah. He actually brought a guy with him to work.
That's right. His name was Tony Parker. That's right. That was a weird one.
All right, just real quick, just one name that you despise working with during this time. Just one, please.
Oh, there's so many. Like, the entire WCW run?
And during this time at the end of the run?
Well, sooner or later, like Goldberg is in the picture.
Ah, yes, he's coming up next.
Yeah, Goldberg, I enjoyed working with him because for some reason he, you know, this is before mixed martial arts was, you know, the rave and everybody lived for Brazilian jiu-jitsu. That's still boring, but that's just me. I don't know about it. Well, I don't know about you guys, but if I'm going to pay $70 on high def to watch something, and it goes 30 seconds, I'm not real happy about it. People like say, yeah, it's going to kill wrestling. No, it's not, because I know the place Undertaker is going to go 35 in that cage tonight. They're going to give me what I want to fight. And that's what we want. We want to watch a fight. Same thing in a movie. You know, we want to watch a fight. We don't want to watch somebody get choked out and tapped in 30 seconds and wipe themselves. So, but anyway, Bill Goldberg had those mixed martial arts gloves on. And I guess he didn't realize that every time he struck you as hard as he could, it didn't hurt as much as the person that got potatoed by it. So every time, you know, you get 8 or 9 of those every night over the course of 5 or 6 nights, it was not that much fun, but he was a good guy. He was just green and looked in a bad situation. But I did beat him with a streak.
We never bragged about it.
Remember when he called himself a hybrid? He's like, how's that sound? Not very good.
Spot, you've been known throughout time as a barometer as if someone can go in a ring or not. There are some famous stories of you coming back into the locker room and looking at your peers and saying that someone doesn't have it. Is there one particular superstar that you just didn't think had it at this time?
In WCW?
Yes.
It's hard to, if you can remember, it was so talented, and there was such, and there was a lot of good talent. So you know, maybe a lot of it was my cup of tea, but honestly, and it's a love-hate thing, because sometimes I love working with players, sometimes I hate it. Sometimes you go in there with Rick, and you're just like, you know, working without a net, like in Philadelphia Spectrum one time. I'm like, okay, I'll just listen to you. Next thing you know, I'm a heel, and I'm doing Ricky Steamboat's spots from Flair Steamboat bathroom, you know, 1985. And, you know, the people obviously didn't want to see that. They wanted to see Rick, you know, Rick as a baby face. And he wanted to, and he wanted to lose by being killed. Well, come on, figure four, man. Booker, same question.
That's all I question, but every guy that I worked with back then, you know, really working for the same goal, which is go out there and make the match something special. There's only one guy in my wrestling career in WCW that never watched any of my matches back on replay or anything, on YouTube or anything. I don't know, never want to see him. And that would be Finn. And the reason why, I mean, Finn is great, man. Don't get me wrong, guys. Finn is great. What he does, and what he does. That's the question. That's the word right there. You can talk to family in the back, and you know, we're going to go out and do this, and we're going to go out and do this, and we're going to go out and do this, and you go out in the ring, and you do better, then they just beat you down. And you just go back, and you wonder what the hell's going on, you know what I mean? But you was always going to be in a fight with Italy, and Italy was going to go out there and make it real as it possibly could be, and I learned a lot from that afterwards, working with Finley. I learned so much for going forward as far as my career go after working with Finley, but those matches were horrible.
I don't know if I had anybody I didn't like to work with. I think there was a lot of people that didn't like to work with me. I just remember we had Loch Ness. And I remember they brought him in to work with Hogan. And I was watching the monitor when he came in. And he did something to Hulk with him. He goes, "You go, brother, this is a stroke." And he got up and walked off. And went to Hogan. You know, and I just remember that was the only time that I was worried that somebody might die in the ring on me, or drop my head, or land on me, kill me. And I remember doing that. Spot where I was supposed to splash into the corner, and my adrenaline was kicking so bad that when I jumped, I shot right up the ring. My left toe hit the top turnbuckle and I hit the floor, but I was so embarrassed that I screwed up. I just hopped up and ran back in the ring because I knew this guy wasn't coming to get me. I just remember that was the only time I was, I think I've ever been in the ring with somebody that I just couldn't, I didn't have any. Nice man.
Just
look at him.
The amazing thing is that, like, probably 8 years earlier, I watched Regal tear the house down.
Right, back in the day.
And I was like, yeah, but it was, he'd gotten old and just, you know, just couldn't, the guy couldn't move.
Further back, I loved working with him. It was, to me, like working with a guy like Joe was the easiest thing in the world.
It was easy working with you guys because even working with Kevin, like Kevin and I were still both big guys. I mean, you guys always went out of your way to enhance what I brought to the table.
Yeah,
you were shining. I didn't know enough to protect myself anyway. I just did what I was.
Okay. Do you remember when we used to do that match? It was you and Luger versus the three of us. And we'd knock Luger out at the beginning. It was the three of us versus you. And you
all this corner stuff to us.
Yeah. Beat us it all up. And then finally Luger would come around. You'd try to high tag. And he'd put one of us in the... we tried to make a save because the double choke slams. And we'd...
Please, we'd go. Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. You guys didn't want to work with Luger, so you should not be getting it. I think Luger was a perfect match. I remember the dark shows were the best. We did the NFT Arena, and I would do the announcing for you guys. You know, and then you get the guys that we bring in talent, extra talent, to work in the NWO. These guys are independent guys trying to get a break, trying to get a job. A lot of times it's not like you're roses. Sometimes you're cannon fodder, you're me. Remember the guys that would talk trash? Well, I'm not going to do that to me. I'm not going to go. I'll kick the crap out of you. Remember that? And they couldn't try to do something to the guy. And I was the announcer, but it was NWO rules. And then finally Kevin got tired of it and said, gee, sick on
me. We had Nick Patrick with the ski mask on the upper boys.
That was fun. Our days were tough. We could do that in the afternoons. We were done with that.
I'm going to piss off the people that paid money to come see us and we'd be
speaking of people, We know that a lot of you have some questions, and we're going to start a Q&A session where you can ask this esteemed panel any question that you see fit about this topic or anything else. I know that I have a question, actually. The night that William Regal wrestles Bill Goldberg, what was that like? Wrestles Bill Goldberg.
I don't remember it. I was drunk at
the time. Great question. Okay, let's turn it over here. Gentlemen here in the front row.
Oh, true.
We talked last night at the DX panel about the invasion of WCW. Obviously, you were part of that. Did Eric Bischoff ever come to you and let you know that they were outside or they were at the door or anything? What was there any plan for retaliation or anything like that?
Are you talking to Kevin on the phone?
I'm talking to Kevin.
The thing was at that time, our production truck had Raw on it, so we always knew what was going on the show. And somebody came to me and they said, "Hey, man, your buddies are outside that door." So I go over to the truck and I look, and here they are in army hats. You know, there's Hunter and Sean and Pop and everybody. They're right there. And all there is this probably 30-foot, it was a Norfolk, right?
Yeah.
You know, they said, you drive underneath the building, there's this like 30-foot. I'm trying to get this old man to open the gate. Me and Scott are standing right there, and I'm thinking, this is going to be amazing. We're going to go off Nitro and on the Raw. And it's like, it's not going to be in it. We're nobody's going to get in trouble because we're just going to walk out and be the buddies for a second. And then hop back in. Yeah, this would be better than the curtain call. The old man wouldn't let the thing up. I'm thinking, dude, you don't understand. And looking back, I'm just like, I should have just punched him.
And hit the button, but
I could have got away with it.
Yeah.
We were doing the whole "let our people go." You're holding my friends hostage. I remember we actually got sued by WCW, and a lot of it had to do with my promo. I came back and I put that promo on Bischoff and Hogan, and I said, "Kevin Nash and Scott, all the people with me right now, for working held hostage by WCW." And I remember in the deposition. The attorney said, "Why didn't you say that?" And I said, because I was talking to Kevin the night before, he said it would be a good idea.
Whose idea was it to pull the tank right up to the building there in the center?
Well, the thing is like, I wanted to do that first, because I didn't want you know, to tip everybody off that we were there. Bruce Christian was producing it. He had different ideas in mind, so.
Obvious thing is, we drove right by them on the way to the building, and in our minds, it was just some crazy fans out there in army stuff. So I don't worry about paying attention. I'm sure I saw right over to the side. We drove right in, and all of a sudden, we decided, going, "Oh my God, that's them. That's like our boys. Like, we're right through here." Because they were, you guys were in the group.
Hey, no questions, please. Gentlemen, right there in the blue shirt, please just stood up.
My question is about, I wanted to ask you about the racial discrimination lawsuit that went on against W from Sonny Onil. You know, saying that a lot of the luchadors are held back because of their race, and you had, Bobby Walker suing, and what I understand is a huge settlement. Can you guys comment on that? Did you experience that while working for WCW?
I never experienced any racial discrimination. However, I think that you know, being a subsidiary of Time Warner, I think. They have Aaron, and so they're very sensitive about anything racial. So if any of that stuff ever come up, they like to squash it and just settle out of court.
I had a little aggressive. Yeah. We went in with that group of guys, actually with Bobby Walker. I think they had a few more of them.
Bobby Walker did not.
I watched him do it.
But the thing was, speak on that right there. I mean, a lot of the black guys that were suing WCW at that time, they asked me to be a part of it as well. And but my thing was, none of the guys work. You know, I mean, I'm all for, you know, equality and whatnot, you know, but then most of the guys that were trying to sue, they really couldn't work. So I told them I couldn't be a part of that. Actually, Taz Watley would be on the picket line, you know, from 3 to 5, and then, you know, on the job for the rest of the day. You know, so it was a little crazy, but I'm glad I didn't, you know, take part in that before that.
Yeah, the Spanish guys, the reason they weren't getting pushed storyline-wise was the guys that weren't getting pushed couldn't speak English.
I mean, that's serious. I mean,
it's serious, man. It wasn't nothing. It just, they couldn't cut a promo, so it was kind of hard to have them.
Yeah, and the business had changed by the end. It wasn't so much, you're just getting very down to roll with the entire package. Talking on the microphone, character, brand, all the things that make a superstar, that's the way WCW was evolving into. So if you couldn't talk on the microphone, it was tough for you to get over and get TV.
Tony, I got over, he wasn't necessarily the greatest in-ring performer.
No, but he could talk.
Yeah.
Who do we have that's next? Hey, how you doing, guys? First thing, thank you for coming to my town in Baltimore from WCW. You get a lot. Appreciate it. Thank you.
That's right.
Two is the wrestler that you miss the most that passed away, each of you.
I'd like to go first with that because I miss him dearly, and that's Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. He was a huge influence, directly and indirectly at the Click, and you know, our epic as far as, you know, everything works. He's such a funny guy, and just, I love him, and this is great.
Who's going on? Oh, for me, it would be Sherry Martel.
Oh, yeah.
If it wasn't for Sherry, you know, the success my brother and I had, us just being a part of something that we knew was special, none of it probably never would have happened without Sister Sherry, is what we called her, and I told him that we do.
Yeah, you guys are great.
Yeah.
I've got a couple. Rick Rude was the first guy that kind of took me under his wing and kind of smarted me up. And then there's the ones that have passed, like, you know, we just lost one not too long ago, Red Armstrong. Yeah. I had my first match with Brad, and I did my first Japanese tour with Brad, so that's a tough one.
It's funny, I used to play golf at the week in Tampa with Brian and Taker. That's our name. We played golf at Silver Dollar Golf Course every week. And when Brian passed away, I always thought Brian was going to be the guy that say something funny at my funeral and help break the living. I don't think I've played golf in the WrestleMania golf tournaments, but I think my grips are rotten. I just like to play golf, and I can't live in my golf bag without thinking about running.
All right. Another question, please.
I'm sorry. Yes, my name is Keith, and I just want to say, first of all, thank you very much for coming out here like this. It's been very informative. My question is about Randy Savage. Was there a reason why he was chosen to have the leg drop on him to start the NWO? And in general, what was it like working with Randy Savage?
I'm going to go on the limb and say, because he was the most overrated basis of the game.
Yeah. Hogan's Man, Negative Powers, all that. It was the ultimate portrayal, I'm sure.
Okay. Another question, please. All right, little fellow, what do you got?
At the end of WCW, How many different people were in NWO?
Great question.
The whole company.
The whole company.
Except more than in this room.
Our limo is full of guys.
Okay. Someone else, please.
Okay. Sorry.
Booker, the question I have for you is, when you first won the world title at the league, there was a lot of controversy about that night, and Hogan, and Jarrett. Can you give us just some insight on what was going on that stage, and how you felt when you were the world title champion?
Oh, man, it was topsy-turvy, to say the least, as far as that night go. I'd already wrestled once that matter of Chris King, and I knew a couple of days before that I was going to win the championship, but at that point in time, Hogan, you know, Kevin, Cut Hall, you know, all those guys had this thing called, you know, creative control, something like that, and sure, getting powers in that contract where they could pretty much do what the hell they wanted to do and when they wanted to. And that night, Hogan chose to pull his card, and he won the championship. I don't know why. Like I said, I was a small fish, you know, a big pond at that time, and I was just, you know, happy to be there. But I was willing to just go home that night and let those guys settle it amongst themselves. Vince Russo is the one that went back to me. Everybody always talk about, you know, how Vince Russo and his ideas, you know, were awful, but I can understand the guy was a genius. I mean,
we weren't awful.
You made me change. As far as that one idea goes, the guy was pretty smart. But when it all happened, Jeff Jarrett and I, we had about 5 minutes to prepare to go out and have that match. I was just glad I was going to be in. I had a lot of questions myself, as well. You know, Ron Simmons, the only black guy that ever had before me. So my question was it the company in the South going to have, you know, respect another black man in that position? So I had a lot of questions that night myself. But when I won, all the questions were answered. The fans went out and celebrated for me that night because I was totally exhausted. And from that day on, I mean, it was the beginning of something special. 5 times later, actually 6 now, but that's another story. But all because of Vince Russo had the kahunas to say, hey, this is the guy, let's go with him, and let's see how it play out. Plus, like I said, I think I was the last man standing. I got the championship by attrition, I think. But I made it work for him.
Okay, who else? All right.
Yes, hi. I'm Paul Horn. You had the opportunity to work with Kevin Sullivan when you were with WCW. And on screen, he's a very intense gentleman. I was wondering if you could share a story about him outside of the other ring so that you could give a little bit of insight into his personality.
Kevin, well, I spent a lot of time with Kevin Sullivan. I used to have to carry Kevin Sullivan back to the bar every night. I would carry him over my shoulder. That was my job as a rookie green giant. With Kevin Sullivan's strength, I would carry him back to the hotel room. He'd be on my shoulder every night. And I found out through one of the guys smarting me up that Kevin's not really passed out.
He was the only one who could hold
it. He was doing it on purpose. So I got the bright idea from one of the local tech guys. I filled a water bottle with a little bit of dry ice, some water, and closed the lid on it tight. It dries, goes from a solid state to a gaseous state pretty fast, and then we stand in a plastic bottle and go off like an M80 firecracker. So outside of Kevin Sullivan's booking office, I broke the dry ice up, put it in the water bottle, screwed the lid on, put it in a metal trash can with a flapping lid, knocked on Kevin's door, and ran down the hall. So just about right, Kevin opens the door and I think go boom, trash can mushrooms out, and Kevin Sullivan pees his pants right there. I actually got Kevin Sullivan to pee, you know, because I wanted to, not because he wanted to.
I think Kevin Sullivan's very underrated as far as being a booker.
Yeah.
And I thought he was very, very, very brilliant when he came to that. I don't really have much to add.
He understood about getting heat, and he was supposed to be hot, and he needed to have heat and make an impact. You know, there's an old saying, baby, they sell t-shirts, heels sell tickets. So, you know, usually business does well when your heels are hot and you've got a baby face that's working for the heels of fire.
It's one thing you saw everyone's on news, you know, we're talking about how much longer we're going to go and get the email to WCW. And Sullivan said, you got to wait until the baby faces come in here together and plead.
Yeah.
That was the truth, because he says once you get to the point where the guys are actually smart in the business, come in and go, come on, uncle, you're killing us, then you know you got enough heat. But they just never did, so.
It was amazing, because, like,
that's a steal.
It was kind of, it was almost like soccer games. Like, the fans started, like, coming, and, like, actually, I think the fans actually at one point started riding with each other, the NWO fans. Versus the WCW.
All six of them.
It's pretty heavy.
A sea full of black and white t-shirts and then like six purple shirts with gold letters.
Yeah.
Okay, more questions?
And Wildcat Willie.
Wildcat
Willie.
Ah. There he is.
There he is. There he is. How are you?
Thanks for dressing up, Joe.
Hey.
Well, see, the thing is, I'll answer that. These guys are working a panel. I'm actually still working on the road kind of match tonight, so.
Okay.
Part-time working team. First one in.
Hey, in this defense, the memo said casual press.
Yeah. This is the NWO. You're out here without a fanny pack, which I'm shocked. Kevin's out here without a bandana, but Kevin's a movie star now, so he looks.
Actually, I'm doing the Sean Connery thing right now.
Yeah, it's working for you. You know, I dress like I'm not gonna wear a suit. Kevin make fun of me for wearing a suit. I'll dress casual. You know, Booker's a GM Smackdown. He's always gonna wear a suit.
Tell it like it is. You dress like a fuck.
Scott Stein seems like a bit of a weak
candidate
for me. Do you have any stories about him?
Scotty was awesome. Scotty was cool. If he was cool with Scotty, he was all right. You know, but if he was one of those guys who were, you knew he was, you know, the meat hook or the meat block, you know, Scotty and Rick would come in and look over and see what guys were going to work. Those guys were in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
The thing is, Rick was the dangerous one.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the Scott like? Scotty. Scotty was, it was Rick that would grab you and just bicycle me out the ring and choke me out.
Rick actually came up to me in the dressing room one time, pulled out a handgun, and shot and pulled the trigger, and there was a blank in there, but it scared the living hell out of me. And I felt the wad hit me and burned my chest and then he shot me.
I remember just going for him, he used to go to Rick Steiner's house, and Rick's kids were even mean. They would throw rocks at Disco's car and wouldn't ever get out of the car. And he would like encourage his kids to throw rocks at Disco because he didn't want Disco to run his house.
You'd be driving down the road in the right lane, all of a sudden the Steiner's
car traffic.
Yeah, we call it the wrestler's lane, but it's actually the shoulder. 85 miles an hour on the shoulder, throwing a gallon of milk in the windshield. And
they run the car. I remember there was a big issue between Bagwell and Scott and Rick, that town. And something happened anyway. Scotty got mad and jumped in Bagwell's sedan to build Cadillac Mount from Davis. Now we're all standing in the back, like wondering what's going on. And Bagwell's standing there going, come on, Scotty, why are you doing me like this? Scotty takes off into the bill, does like a donut, hubcap flies off, floored it, reefing the car back, comes back and hits a median in the parking lot, one of those cement medians with grass, and completely wipes the rear axle out from underneath the car. Completely wipes it. The bumper drives, sparks fly, brand new Cadillac, no axle, drive shaft pulled out of the hole, it gets out, throws Marcus the keys and walks inside. Doesn't say a word. Why do you do me like that, Scotty? Whatever it is, let me know, because I want to make sure I don't do it.
Okay, more questions, please. All right.
Yes, what was it like working with Stan Savage around the time, like, from 96 to 98, we had that success for about 80 to 88 weeks?
80 to 88 weeks, that's pretty specific. You never worked with Sting. Sting set up the, you know, and he'd come down at the end of the show repelling it with a bat. You know, it was the old Dusty Bead. I mean, that was, you really didn't do much with him. I was just always amazed that Sting didn't speak for over 2 years. When he finally did have something to say, he said, Mamacita. Remember that in the corner when he beat Hogan?
Yeah.
He said something in Spanish. I was just like, really? You haven't spoken 2 years after that's what you got? I'm still ticked off that he's on the alumni page on the WWE.com. Yeah. I have heat with that. I just have heat with it.
I kind of do too, because, like, truthfully, if you've never worked in WWE, like, you just don't know. Right? I mean, you can be in WCW for 20 years, and it's just not
the same. Larry's going to get in trouble with that. What? No. No.
We were going to have time for one more question, but before that, I'd just like to take a moment and point out a dignitary in the crowd. He's a face that many of you recognize. He's been through WCW all the time. He's hiding back there, but Charles Robinson is here. Charles, I just want to say thank you very much. You have to wait to be called.
Nice job. Where the fuck the system? I got it. Nice job.
Someone with a microphone. I'm going to take a young lady here in the front row. Why not? You're going to close it out, young lady. What do you got? If you could.
I have a question for Kevin Nash. Big Show voted to the end. I saw it all went back to WWE after the fall of WCW. Mm-hmm. Why did you go back?
Great question. I still had 16 months left on my contract with WCW. Get paid a whole lot. And they basically said that they would buy me out at 50 cents on the dollar, and then I could get a downside, which would put me back to where I was at originally, and then I could go to work, or make the same amount of money for 16 months, watch TV and sit in my house. It's not part of business. It says, yeah, at 42 years old, I don't think you give money back. But the need of listening. And he came on the WWE program in America Capris, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
I'm going to revolutionize Poppy, brother.
I think.
Oh, that weird Poppy was taking there for a while.
That was. I
went to Poppy Taker.
I remember 2 hours how that should have revolutionized the business for Braveheart Poppy.
Yeah. I remember the sellout at the curtain when Dallas was working with Taker and the house.
Remember how pissed Taker
was? Oh my god, I remember one time.
He pulled that goatee so hard he could pull it out.
I remember one time he was hitting Dallas and Dallas was being the problem. Finally, Taker just like broke character in the middle of the ring. And then he hit him again and Dallas still didn't bomb.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think on behalf of everyone, we want to say thank you to all four of you for the great interview, for the wonderful event, for the wonderful event tonight. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much for being here. Phoenix, thank you very much.
If we get something good. Alright. I gotta go switch to the 15 here.